जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी माधवा कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी जय गोपी जन भालाभा गिरिवर धारे जय गोपी जन भालाभा गिरिवर धारे यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जामुनातीरावन चारे जमुनातीरावन चारे जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी जैया गोपी जन भालाभा गिरिवर धारे गोपी जन भालाभा गिरिवर धारे यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन यशोद नंदन ब्रज जन रंजन जमुनातीरावन चारे जमुनातीरावन चारे जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी जय राधा माधवा कुंज बिहारी जय ओम विष्णुपाद परमहंस परिव्राजकाचार्य। Ashtot Arashata Shishimad, His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraja Gacharya, Ashtot Arashata Shishimad, His Divine Grace, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Goswami Maharaj, Srila Prabhupada Ki. Garantara Shimam Bhagavatam Ki, Dai Gaura Premanandi. Oh, glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glories to the assembled devotees. Oh, glories to Shishi Guru and Shri Gauranga. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. We're reading from Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 8, entitled Withdrawal of the Cosmic Creation. Chapter 2, entitled The Elephant's Gajendra's Crisis. Text 7 to 19 today. So there's a lot of verses. What I'm going to do, we're going to read number 8, chant it together, and then I'm going to go through the translations of the other verses. So, text number 8. Sarit saro bhir achodhai Pulinair mani balukai Devastri ma jana moda Saurabham vanilair juta Sharit saro bir achodhai Pulinair mani balukai Devastri majuna moda Saurabham bhuanilair juta Sarit saro bhir achodhai Pulinair mani balukai Devastri majana moda Saro Saurabham Vanilair Yuta. Christian. Wonder how to do this the best. What I'm going to do before doing the word by word, I'm going to read the previous verse and then come to this one, do the word by word translation and purport, and then continue to the other one so there's a little continuity. So, you know from what it is. So, text number 7, because there's so many verses, I'm just going to read the translation. Text number 7. The valleys beneath Trikuta Mountain are beautifully decorated by many varieties of jungle animals. And in the trees, which are maintained in gardens by the demigods, varieties of birds chirp with sweet voices. Text number 8, today's verse, so the word by word. Sarit with rivers, Sarobhi and lakes, Achodai filled with crystal clear water, Pulanai beaches, Mani with small gems, Balukai resembling grains of sand, Devastri of the damsels of the demigods, Majana by bathing in that water, Amoda bodily fragrance, Saurabha very fragrant, Ambu with the water, Analai and the air, Jutaha enrich the atmosphere of Trikuta Mountain. Translation and purport by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. Trikuta Mountain has many lakes and rivers, with beaches covered by small gems resembling grains of sand. The water is as clear as crystal, and when the demigod damsels bathe in it, their bodies lend fragrance to the water and the breeze, thus enriching the atmosphere for poor. Even in the material world, there are many grades of living entities. The human beings on earth generally cover themselves with external fragrance to stop their bad bodily odors. But there's all that wreck that is going on. Okay. Bodily odors. But here we find that because of the bodily fragrance of the demigod damsels, the rivers, the lakes, the breeze, and the entire atmosphere of Trikuta Mountain also become fragrant. Since the body of the damsels in the upper planetary system are so beautiful, we can just imagine how beautifully formed are the bodies of the Vaikuntha damsels, or the damsels in Vrindavan, the gopis. Text number 9 to 13, translation. In the valley of Trikuta Mountain, there was a garden called Rutumat. This garden belonged to the great devotee Varuna and was a sporting place for the damsels of the demigods. Flowers and fruits grew there in all seasons. Among them were mandaras, parijatas, patalas, ashokas, champakas, kutas, pijalas, panasas, mangoes, amratakas, kramukas, coconut trees, date trees, and pomegranates. There were madukas, palm trees, tamalas, asanas, arjunas, aristas, undumbaras, plaxas, banyan trees, kimshukas, and sandalwood trees. There were also picumardas, Govidaras, Sharalas, Shura Darus, grapes, sugar canes, bananas, Jambu, Dabaris, Akshas, Abhajas, and Amalakis. Got all that? Text 14 to 19, translation. In that garden there was a very large lake filled with shining golden lotus flowers, and the flowers known as Kumuda, Kalara, Utpala, and Satapatra, which added excellent beauty to the mountain. There were also Bilba, Kapita, Jambira, and Balataka trees. Intoxicated bumblebees drone honey and hum with the chirping of the bird, whose songs were very melodious. The lake was crowned with swans, karandavas, chakravakas, cranes, and flocks of water chickens, datihuas, koyastis, and other murmuring birds. Because of the agitating movement of the fish and tortoise, the water was decorated with pollen that has fallen from the lotus flowers. The lake was surrounded by kadamba flowers, betasa flowers, nalas, nipas, banjulakas, kundas, kurubakas, ashokas, sirisas, kutayas, ingudas, kubjakas, swarnayuktis, nagas, punagas, jatis, malikas, satapatras, Jalakas, and Madavilatas. The banks were also abundantly adorned with varieties of trees that yielded flowers and fruits in all seasons. Thus, the entire mountain stood gloriously decorated. For poor Vaishnava Prabhupada. Judging from the exhaustive description of the lakes and rivers on Trikuta Mountain, on earth, there is no comparison to their super excellence. On other planets, however, there are many such wonders. For instance, we understand that there are 2 million different types of trees, and not all of them are exhibited on earth. Srimad Bhagavatam presents the total knowledge of the affair of the universe. It not only describes this universe, but also takes into account the spiritual world beyond the universe. No one can challenge the Srimad Bhagavatam's description of the material and spiritual worlds. The attempt to go from the earth to the moon has failed, but the people of earth can understand what exists on other planets. There is no need of imagination. One may take actual knowledge from Srimad Bhagavatam and be satisfied. Om Ajnana Timirandasya Jananjana Shalakaya Chakshur Ummilitam Yena Tasmai Sri Guru Vrindam. Namo Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Srimate Bhakti Vedanta Swami Iti Namo.
Namaste Saraswate Deve Gauravani Pracharine Nirvishesha Srinivasi Pachakyaya Pancha Kalpa Taruvya Sha Kripa Sindhu Vyeva Cha Patitanam Pavanevyo Vaishnavevyo Namo.
So we hear the descriptions of heavenly region. So anybody memorize one of the varieties of trees? Bananas. There were pomegranates and things like that. Well, you know, maybe less than a handful of some that we can recognize. But one thing that we can understand is an amazing, is very wonderful. It's a type of realm that is only conceivable in the imagination of people. That, you know, a heavenly realm. And one thing that is always pretty fascinating is how in all cultures, people have this cheap understanding of the achievement of heaven. In general, you know, when people die, you know, there's the assumption, unless it's a very awful, you know, demoniac personality, that people have this conception that everybody reaches heaven, you know, just to be a fairly normal type of people, then, you know, you will reach heaven. It's almost like a given. And in Indian culture, it becomes even more, you know, well, not necessarily even more, you know, they're more upfront. But I think, you know, also, yeah, actually all the religions, they understand that. Like, for example, if you see an obituary in the newspaper, specifically with Indians, they call the people who pass, they, besides expressing, you know, their affection for the person who has passed, they call him, you know, like a swargavasi, or, you know, someone who is actually a resident of the heavenly planets, like that. And so there's this very cheap conception of, you know, you just have to be, you know, a normal person, sort of, you know, don't commit some gross crime, and, you know, sort of be a good citizen, a good father, a good mother, you know, a good son, like that. And regardless, you know, it doesn't matter how religious you were in your life, or how you go to heaven, like that. But it's not such a thing. And the Vedic scriptures describe that these are very, very high regions. There's different levels. It's explained that there is 14 planetary systems, and of them, there is a series of them that are heavenly, and each one of them is described that is even much more subtle and opulent than the other one. And for example, the type of enjoyment and the type of opulence that is enjoyed in the heavenly regions, as which is described here, is not even close comparison to what is, you know, in these earthly regions, you know. And there's also not only the type of atmosphere, opulent atmosphere that is there, but also the capacity of the individual to enjoy that atmosphere. So the not only the senses are much more capable of enjoying than what we have here in this, you know, these earthly sort of bodies, you know, like that. And there's also a difference in time. The bodies of the demigods, of the residents of heaven, they also don't dwindles or sort of becomes, you know, decrepit, like, you know, our type of bodies right here. They actually remain very, very capable of enjoying the heavenly pleasures throughout their life, even to the time of death, you know. And the time span is also much, much greater. And, you know, as you go up in these planetary systems, you know, the descriptions that we hear here is the Swarga, heavens. But over heaven, there's also other planetary systems that are much higher, all the way to Brahmaloka. So in this earth, in this Swarga Loka, it is explained that one day in Swarga Loka is comparable to 6 months in our realm, in the earthly realm. And but if you go to Brahmaloka, we hear, you know, a moment of Lord Brahma, and a moment means like, okay, that's 1 year. One moment is 1 year. And we remember that from the pastime of Lord Brahma stealing the cowherd boys. It was just a moment. It was what, you know, Lord Brahma, okay, let me steal them. I put them there. Okay, I turn back to Krishna. That's 1 year. And so for the residents of heaven, the span of time that you have there to enjoy, the capacity that you have to enjoy, and the atmosphere, everything that is there to be enjoyed is super, super, super. There's no comparison to here to what we know. You know, when we hear a description of something beautiful, we think, you know, now it's very rare of a, you know, beautiful beach in some, you know, exotic country or something like that, you know. And but even then, really, I live in a country that has very beautiful nature, and it has such a, you know, sort of those paradisiac sort of beaches or something like that, and areas. But really, you know, when you really go to it, then there's mosquitoes, then there is, you know, you have to make sure that, you know, you have your things locked, because some thief can come. And sometimes you go into the waters, and then, you know, one of those jelly things, you know, comes, you know, and touch you, and you get burned, and then you have to put lotion because you get really burned. And, you know, so really, it's not necessarily, you know, like such a fantastic, you know, on, you know, like with enjoyment that it has, you know, like perfect enjoyment. No, it's not like that. And on the top of that, you have to pay, you know. Say if you go, okay, here in the US, you know, probably the most heavenly region that you can visit, heavenly, no, is Hawaii. Yeah, you have to pay dearly to be there, you know. And and then the fact is that regardless, you have to come back to your ugly place, you know, and then, you know, do again, deal with all the, you know, struggles of life. So there's no comparison. There's no comparison. So we hear from the Srimad Bhagavatam these beautiful, beautiful spaces, you know, that you can only, you know, you can only have an experience of that in the imaginations of people, you know. Like, you know, they create movies and they create a literature that describes such places, you know, like that. But only in the imagination, but they're factual. There is such a places, and the Srimad Bhagavatam describes them in great detail. Like that. And there's descriptions in the Srimad Bhagavatam of Indraloka, which is the kingdom of Lord Indra, which is the king of heaven. And it's described that in the palace are, you know, pretty amazing, you know, beautiful, and there are gardens that are with such a description as we just heard right now of this, you know, mountain. And you can imagine the mountain, you know, that the peaks are of golden and silver, like that I just described. So the gardens of the Indraloka are very famous. They're described as the Nandakanana gardens, Nandakanana gardens, right? And in the Nandakanana gardens, they have a particular drink that is available that is called, it's like a wine that is called the Soma Ras. Now this Soma Ras, when you drink, not only you get intoxicated, but your body becomes even much more capable of enjoying, and, you know, much more vigor, how do you say vigor, no? Become, you know, like really, it's not like when we drink, when people drink wine here, they become stupid, and then, you know, basically they become incapable of doing any enjoyment, actually, to enjoy. They just, they just go into something that, you know, is not, I mean, it's pitiful. Like, it really is. That enjoyment is, you know, it's amazing how in this culture, the rationalization of suffering is sold and, you know, convince a whole society that this is enjoyment, you know. Drinking and becoming intoxicated, and you see the so-called enjoyment of people, you know, in a pitiful condition, just in a bathroom, just, you know, like that, you know, and or smoking, really, you know, the enjoyment of smoking. You see people like, you know, like really enjoying that whole thing, that it tastes horrible, it smells horrible, and it's a horrible experience. You know, whoever have the misfortune of doing that, you can always recall the first time that you tried, and it's the most horrible experience, you know, that one can imagine. Same with drinking, all that stuff. But different in the heavenly planets, there is this amazing, you know, beverage by which they become intoxicated, but they, but, you know, they become even much more capable and stronger and much more acute to enjoy. So with no doubt, it's a very attractive for materialistic people. This is like, whoa, this is like the goal of life. So for people, you know, that are in very lower cultures, not greatly civilized culture, like our esteemed European, American type of cultures, we don't have so much access to, you know, all this reality. So the access that we have is that, you know, we would like to be like, you know, some a wealthy person, you know, and have a mansion, you know, in Florida, and, you know, and here and there in some exotic place, and then have to deal with it. Mosquitoes and things like that. But for those who are karma kandis, when they get the information, it's a very attractive proposal. You know, so like any materialistic person, you know, you set yourself a goal. I love to be in that place. It's like, you know, when you have a propaganda of, you know, the beaches of Jamaica, you know, and you know, so there's all these beautiful people enjoying in the beach, you know, like that. It's got all be yours. You just need, you know, this much money and save. Even you, we can do it And you can pay it by parts. You know, you can pay it in several years like that. So, woo. So you make plans, you work very hard, and you know, you go there. I have some people that I used to work with that they really got into this Jamaica thing. And, you know, they will work very hard to spend, you know, their meager 2 weeks of vacation that they're given, you know, in this culture, to go to Jamaica. So basically, they work very hard the whole year to get these 2 weeks in Jamaica. So I asked them, so how did it go? And they say, yeah, it was great. You know, so did you go around the island and, you know, just see all the beautiful places in there? No, they just stay in the resort. And say, really? So you didn't go to the town? You didn't go and meet the people and you didn't go and see the things? No, because they discourage that to the tourists because, you know, they may be cheated and this. So they create a resort that they got all these artificial things, an artificial beach, an artificial this, an artificial that, some, you know, old fence, you know, and so you just drink yourself, they drink themselves out, you know, they become intoxicated and sit down in a pool, you know, and then just walk to the little beach, you know, and do some snorkeling in some, you know, little fence area. And that's the big thing. So I say, you know, really? So so anyway, that's their experience. So that's our culture. They sell you on that, you know, to this paradise. You know, the beach in the north, and the North Beach that is like that. They have some fake palms here in Chicago, you know, by the beach, by the lake. You know, you pass and there's some fake palms. You know, palms don't grow in Chicago, but they have some palms somehow or other, you know, to create a sense of paradise, you know. So that's here. But for the Karmakandis, they hear about Swarga, Loka, and they start to make plans. If I do this, you know, puja, if I do this sacrifice, if I make sure that I come every day to the temple and start in one leg, you know, for, you know, 10 minutes, you know, and do all these things, I make sure that I, you know, do all these rituals, I know, according to the scriptures, that I can reach this heaven and I can really enjoy there. So they got soul to that. And the problem is that the Vedas tell us that even in these regions, there is it's all temporary. It's something that won't last. Krishna tells that in the Bhagavad Gita, that from the highest planet, which is Brahmaloka, all the way to the lowest planet, these are all places in which birth and death takes place. Abrahma, Bhumana, Loka, Punar, Avarti, Arjuna. That they're temporary. So you're just there for a period of time that can afford your pious credit. And after that, you have to come down again. So it's a place of, it's a place of misery. So again, okay, we go on to the heavenly planets, you know, okay, whatever. Even if I have to be there for 10,000 years, 10,000 years are good, you know, amount of time. I go for that. I'm sold for that. You know, vacation of 10,000 years, who doesn't want to take that? You know, in a perfect place for enjoying. But it's not so perfect also. We hear in the Bhagavatam, we hear that You know, there are demons that are constantly finding an opportunity to attack the demigods. And quite often it happens, you know, we hear in the scriptures that this is happens, you know, it happens that sometimes they really attack and then sometimes they conquer the whole heavenly regions and, you know, really makes miserable, you know, the life of the demigods. I mean, there are many instances in which the demigods are so desperate that they have to go to Lord Vishnu to pray for help. So they're in anxiety that the demons can come at any time, you know, and they have to fight sometimes the demons to make sure to keep them. So there's anxieties right there, and there's this anxiety that, you know, at one point you finish, you have to come down again. And there's the anxiety that you make sure you don't get so intoxicated that you commit an offense. Because, you know, if you happen to commit an offense in that realm, when, you know, when you have a whole population of highly qualified people, then when you have an element that is, you know, that sort of not in place, it becomes very apparent. It's like when you have a stain in a white cloth, you can see it immediately. So, you know, we have the case of demigods residents or heavenly residents like Nala Kuvera and Manigriva Kuvera, who were completely intoxicated in one of such lakes, in one of such gardens, with, you know, a whole bunch of heavenly damsels, that their fragrance is so amazing that just by entering in water, the whole thing becomes fragrant. So they were there, intoxicated with somaras, enjoying like anything materially, with these beautiful ladies, and anyway, all inappropriate, and they insulted by their, you know, behavior, Narada Muni. So they were cursed. So this also can happen in the heavenly plan. So it's not a clean slate of enjoyment. So therefore, this is within the material world. So in the material world, really, there is no safe place. We're going to hear in this a narration of Gajendra, the king of the elephants, that although he was in this heavenly region, he got into an extremely miserable situation. And we're going to hear about that. So within this whole material universe, there's not such a place, it's not a place for enjoyment. Therefore, the material universe is described by Krishna as a Shushukam Kartun Abhyayam. It's a place of miseries, and it's because the main thing of this place is temporary. So in reality, it's all an illusion. It's all something that is, you know, like this. Because 10,000 years in heaven, from the perspective of eternity, there is no difference between 10,000 years and 10,000 seconds. There's no difference from the perspective of eternity. It's this, like that. So it's not a place for enjoyment. You can't enjoy here. It really don't. It doesn't happen. So there is, of course, Prabhupada explains here the description, what to speak. If this is so amazing and so wonderful, just to hear the description, what to speak of the spiritual world? What to speak of, you know, the realms like Goloka Vrindavan, the descriptions of Goloka Vrindavan, and the descriptions of Vaikuntha planets, is it That is a perfect world, because right there, there's no this time, you know, feature that it makes everything, you know, finish, that dwindles everything, that crushes everything. But there is eternal time. So it's a realm that is eternal. It's a realm that the beauty of the inhabitants of the spiritual world is described that millions and millions of cubits doesn't even compare to that. And when speaking about opulences, we hear all these trees that are described here, but in the spiritual world, the trees are described as kalpavrikshas, which is desiring trees. So, you know, you have here varieties. One tree is mangoes, one tree is bananas, pomegranates, and things like that. Well, you got to a tree in the spiritual world and you say, I want a mango to offer to Krishna. Then there's a mango. Oh, how about a banana? Well, here's a banana. Oh, but we also need some flowers. So, and here's the flowers. So it's a desiring tree. And the animals, the cows, are kamadenus, which also they fulfill all desires. And the place is described that everything is covered by not just jewels, but this particular jewel that is called the Chintamani stone. Chintamani jewels are jewels that also fulfills all desires, and everything it touches, it becomes, you know, gold, like that, touchstones, you know, like. So it's beyond the description of the heavenly regions. And of course, a chief among all of this is that the Supreme Personality of Godhead resides there, and the loving, perfect relationship. So it's a perfect world. And that's what any intelligent person, we, you know, go for it. So this is the place. This is where we're supposed to go. However, back to this heavenly region, I was, you know, there's a really nice story. Sankirtan Prabhu, a wonderful Srila Prabhupada disciple who is a great storyteller, he tells a story of, to get to heaven for a materialistic person, you have to be highly qualified. Not anyone enters into heaven. You have to be very pious. And there's a process to enter to heaven. So this idea that we have of materialistic people that, you know, they can just, yeah, assume, oh yeah, my grandmother went to heaven. She died very peacefully. She's in heaven. You know, like that. That doesn't work necessarily like that. My grandma, I love her, but she used to, you know, butcher chickens and, well, anyway, all kinds of things. So not necessarily, I would say, you know, it fits the description of the inhabitants of heaven like that. Very pious people. So there was such a case of a king. This is described in the Ramayana, Valmiki Ramayana, that in the dynasty of King Ikshwaku, it was a king. His name was Trishanku Maharaj. So Trishanku Maharaj was extremely beautiful. I mean, like every perfect feature, like, you know, the name of the statue that is in Florence, that David, no? Yeah, that is supposed to be the perfect, you know, figure of a man. Well, this guy was perfect, you know, perfect everything. The hair was very silk. Anyway, he's described, just like they describe here, the heavenly, this mountain, they were describing the beauty of this guy, you know, like hair, you know, every hair was in perfect place, you know, a nice turban, you know, the clothes, silk, the garlands, you know, the physique, everything was perfect. This guy was very, you know, very attractive fellow. And he knew it, you know, and he thought of himself, he was so perfect that there was no beauty that could match his beauty. So, you know, to find a suitable wife or queen, you know, it was not, he needed to be in heaven. Because the beauty of the people of earth didn't match his heavenly beauty. So the only ones that can match his heavenly beauty was heaven. So he should be in heaven. He decided, I should go to heaven. And then he went to the priest of the dynasty, the Sun dynasty at that time, Vashishta Muni. And he went to Vashishta Muni and requested, my dear sir, you're a powerful sage. You're the guru of our dynasty. And I request you, I place into you my desire. I want to go to heaven in this body. Because that's where I deserve to be. And the sister say, no. Just go home and do your duties. And at the end of your life, if you do everything nicely, then you go to heaven. And so he declined. He said, you know, this silly, foolish, you know. So then he was, you know, sort of pretty upset, you know, muttering about himself like that. Then he approaches the 100 sons of Vashishta Muni, who were also, you know, part of the priests, you know, of the kingdom. And he requested, so I'd like to go to heaven. And the son of Vashishta, they say, my father declined. So what is this childish question? Just follow the instruction. Just go and perform your duties as a king. And, you know, at the end, you go to the heaven. Trishanku became really upset at this point. And he just started to insult. He said, you, Vashishta Muni, and all of you are useless. You just went into, and then the son of Vashishta, they became really upset. Because they were offending the father, and they cursed him. And the curse is that you will lose all your beauty because you're so proud about this beauty. You lose all your beauty and you will become a chandala. So all of a sudden, beautiful Trishanku became this, you know, ugly. I mean, like, ugly was beyond description what it said. I mean, it was like, you know, ugly. The beautiful silk hair became, you know, some crunch, you know, thing, you know, like that. You know, all, you know, this form, you know, and smelly. It's described that it was really stinky, you know, smelly fellow. And then there's ugly Trishanku, and then when he goes to his kingdom, to his palace, you know, people were like, whoa, who are you? You know, get out of here. You know, and they say, no, it's me, it's your king, it's Trishanku. You know, they just get this guy out of here. They just beat him, you know, to bloody pulp, you know, and they kick him out, you know. So eventually got to be known that, you know, indeed this was Trishanku, and he got cursed. So, you know, all the queens all the family members, they couldn't stand the guy. They just fled. They just leave him. But this Trishanko, he was determined. So he say, you know, I'm going to Vishwamita Muni, who was Vishwamita at that time, was sort of having more or less like he Vishwamita Muni. The story of Vishwamita Muni is that he was a Kshatriya, and he got defeated by Vasishtha Muni. So he had a little bit of a rift with Vasishtha Muni. So he decided he would become a sage more powerful than Vasishtha Muni. So at that time, he was, you know, like a little bit of an ego thing, you know. But he became a very powerful ascetic sage, Vishwamita Muni, very powerful. So Trishanku went and then, you know, told his sad tale to Vishwamita Muni, saying, you know, that I wanted to go to heaven. I have, you know, and when Vishwamita Muni first saw him, Trishanku, what happened to you, my God? And, you know, he's playing, and he became sympathetic. So he said, sure, I will take you to heaven. See, he took the opportunity to say, with this one, I can up Vasishtha Muni, you know. So Vasishtha Muni say he couldn't take it to heaven. I will take it to heaven. I will take you to heaven. So Trishanku became very happy. And then Vasishtha Muni called all the sages. You know, Vishwamita instructed his disciples, okay, you all go and tell all the sages, you know, including the sons of Vasishtha, that I will perform this big sacrifice to take, you know, Trishanku to heaven. Even in that ugly deformed form, I will take him to heaven. So, anyway, shorted the story, you know, and he performed the sacrifice. He created this big sacrifice, this big yagya, and made the offerings to the demigods. But the demigods, they didn't manifest, they didn't accept. They say, you know, we can, you know, first of all, the beneficiary of this sacrifice is an unqualified person. And, you know, there's a process to go to heaven. We can break the laws of the universe. So we won't accept this offering. Vishwamita became really upset and say, okay, you won't take him? I will send it with my own powers. So he gathered all his mystic powers and so, you know, place it on this Trishanku and say, Trishanku, ascend! And then Trishanku went like, whoom! Like a dart, you know, like, you know, it's explained that it was, you know, like someone throws, you know, an arrow. He went like, whoosh, going towards heaven. So Trishanku was, you know, beaming towards heaven like Superman or something like that, going up like a rocket. Whoosh. And then Indra says this ugly, smelly guy just coming, you know, like darting towards heaven and say, no way, Trishanku, descend. And then Trishanku went, you know, head down towards earth, like whoosh, like a, you know, like a missile, you know, down. And there's Trishanku, ah, help! He's going down. And then Vishwamita saw this Trishanku coming down, and then he says, Trishanku, ascend! And then Trishanku goes up again, but, you know, his legs pointing up and his head coming down. He goes again, Indra, Trishanku, descend! Whoosh, ascend! Whoosh, descend! So the guy was feeling like a yo-yo, you know. So he says, you know, no, I don't want to go to heaven anymore. You know, he was in this business. And then Vishwamita, he was determined that he's not going to be up by this. He said, okay, Indra won't take you. I will create a heavenly planet for you. You know, my work. So he created a parallel heavenly planets with some stars and things like that. And for Trishanku, the only difficulty, so Trishanku got his heavenly ring by the power, the mystic power of Vishwamitra Muni. The only difficulty is that the poor fellow remained upside down in his heavenly region. So he's all the time like with head going down. So he really couldn't enjoy properly, you know. He recuperated again his beautiful features, but he's like this, head down, feet up for, you know, his whole time that he had to be there. So the moral is that you have to qualify. But even then, it's not going to do it. It's not going to do it. So if you want to really have this, be completely fulfilled in this natural feature that we have as living entities, like, which is full of bliss, where Ananda Maya Vyasat, we naturally look for enjoyment. The only way we can enjoy is in the service of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that will give the real eternal pleasure that belongs to the soul, this Ananda feature, which is a true devotional service. Anyway, stop there. Any comment or questions?
Hare Krishna Prabhu, thank you for your class. That was a nice story. This is not my real question, but what part of that last story, where can I find that? What is that?
The same in the Valmiki Ramayana.
Oh, really? Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I probably heard so.
But this devotee, Sankirtan Prabhu, he has a little book that it was named The Fish That Grew, something like that. Something with the fish that grew. It's beautiful. So he tells several stories, and among those stories, he tells this of Trishanku.
All right, thank you. My question is regarding preaching to the faithless, and this last purport you read of the last verse of Bhagavatam, the class you gave, and the purport Prabhupada says, no one can challenge the Srimad Bhagavatam's descriptions of the material and spiritual worlds. And my question is, basically, we see that Prabhupada really didn't start his preaching off like that, like, walk up to people saying the Bhagavatam is, you know, perfect. He started with chanting Hare Krishna and then serving the devotees. And then the devotees asked Prabhupada when he first started in New York, Prabhupada, are there any rules and regulations we should follow? And then Prabhupada said, oh, yes, now you're learning. Yes, of course. And so that reminds me of a nice quote. It says, no one cares how much you know until they know how much you care. And so we can see that in daily life, we take whatever our mother, our father, our friends, whatever they say as authoritative because we feel that they care about us. Now, in regards to our preaching to other, you know, people who are new to Krishna consciousness, essentially, I mean, I've noticed that for myself and maybe others could attest is that usually our platform of preaching isn't our character. It's like, you know, what Prabhupada says in here, the Bhagavatam is perfect, it's free from the four defects. And then we're like wondering why, you know, they don't listen to us. And so my question is like, how much does it depend on our sincerity, their sincerity? Because we could see that a lot of times when people hear these outrageous descriptions of the Bhagavatam, like Rishi Badev, past stool that was fragrant, or these heavenly planets, or even Shiva, when he discharged semen, it turns into gold and silver. So these are outrageous. We wouldn't begin with that. And one last example I'll give, that an exception where somebody accepted it, Bhakti Mitch Prabhu, I'm not sure where he is right now, but one devotee, when he first came to the temple, gave him asked him to read a chapter in the Bhagavatam, and it was the hellish planets. Like, are you inspired by this? No. So, but he's an exception. If that was me, I would, like, this philosophy is not for me. So how much important is it to basically depends on our sincerity, the other people's sincerity, and Krishna's sanction. My question basically is that we wouldn't normally start off our discussion with people starting off with these outrageous descriptions. We'll kind of make a friendship with them so they'll actually have faith in, you know, our character or Prabhupada's character. But sometimes we could see that people, even if they do ask us these outrageous questions or we share them, they still stick around. So my question is, how much should we be conscious of preaching to the faithless the outrageous descriptions in the Bhagavatam? Sometimes we can and sometimes we can't. So what should we do? What's the dilemma?
Well, Srila Prabhupada described the Bhagavad Gita as the basic. And then when you're able to, you know, understand the Bhagavad Gita, then you go to the he describes a graduate, then, you know, higher studies, I guess you do your master or something like that with the Bhagavatam, and then you become the highest doctorate or something like that with the Chaitanya Charitamrita. So, you know, it's a different level. You have to have faith in Krishna. You have to become a devotee to have a proper access to the Bhagavatam. Now, that's my understanding. So in general, we first preach with the Bhagavad Gita. You know, the first thing that we tell people is about, you know, you're different from your body, you're a spirit soul. That's the ABC. And then, you know, how to use your abilities to serve Krishna. You know, the devotional service, engaging in devotional service. And how's the highest thing that we can do is just to surrender to Krishna. So we're in that, that's a level of preaching, the entry level, which is, you know, we're still on that entry level. And then once you have that faith that, and you recognize yourself as a devotee, then the Bhagavatam becomes, you know, part of your sadhana. You know, chanting of the holy name, the five main things, you know, that are there, worshiping the deities, chanting the holy name, you know, the relationship with the spiritual master, living in a holy place, and hearing the Bhagavatam. So, you know, you have to be a devotee, you know, to then fully take in the Bhagavatam with that type of faith. So for us devotees, this is it. You know, you don't need to go, you know, we get entrance, you know, to understand how the universe look like, different regions, and how the spiritual world looks like. And what are the relationships and descriptions of the inhabitants, everything. We got entrance to that. Even though, you know, we're not necessarily prepared or able to, you know, experience that directly, we experience it through the Bhagavatam. Some, you know, you have sometimes to have kids that they haven't had the opportunity to travel outside the immediate place that they are. So, you know, even within the U.S., you know, so they hear in their books, you know, descriptions of other countries like China, you know, something like that. So they're able to see just by the descriptions, you know, of others who have been there. So, so similarly. Any other, actually, we probably should. You want to ask a question? Okay, Krishna Arjuna.
You were mentioning through the class the very strong will that was there, both with Vishvamrita Muni and Krishanti too. So I think what I'm curious about is that will was directed towards achieving some very set goal that was some idea of enjoyment or some idea of supremacy over somebody else. And so pursuing that with determination. So in the case where the will is very strong for following the particular idea one has of enjoyment or, you know, material happiness, what is it that permits the switching or that will to, I don't know if the word would be to break or to change, that's more in the direction that's described or recommended through the Bhagavatam of, you know, turning one's attention rather to one's desires and one's will moving towards Krishna and the spiritual world.
As for the Bhagavad Gita, transcendental knowledge. Transcendental knowledge is what permits. And transcendental knowledge, as per the Bhagavad Gita, is only received through the devotee of Krishna. So hence, you know, the contact, the devotee, is the one that becomes the different maker. And with the devotee, you get transcendental knowledge. And once you start to receive transcendental knowledge, the whole shift, you know, start to change. And, you know, your north becomes different, you know, like that. So, in short. Okay, we can stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.